Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always. You know, as the world of energy and B2B and skilled trades evolve, there's an increasing demand for data. And not only just data, but actionable data, secure data. And we can't live in a world that just sits unused, unmanaged. It has to be managed and filtered and utilized in a lot of different ways. And some of the folks making that happen are a couple of my friends from a company called InterTrust, who I brought in to talk with me today. Julian and Ali, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
You know, Julian, I want to start with you. Our conversation today really will center probably mostly around the energy and utilities world. But ironically enough, our first introduction to each other was through the broadcast industry, because some of the same challenges that existed there from a distributed source standpoint and an IT and security management standpoint also exist in energy and utilities and fiber and all these different places. Talk about some of those challenges that have popped up and even some of those similarities as we've moved to a more decentralized and connected universe.
I'd love to. It's really the DNA of what InterTrust really is. We've been around, as you know, for more than 30 years with the principle that came from our founder, Victor Scheer, brilliant man that saw the future of the internet before it was widely hyperconnected like it is today. He realized that there needed to be protection for data wherever it went in this world. And he was back in the days of, you know, dial-up modems and stuff, but he was a visionary. And he saw the necessary application for things that we call zero trust today, highly trusted networks, and the need for governance for data wherever it goes. And that requiring really trusted platforms, hardware-based, software-based trusted platforms that what we call the edge now, right? So our genesis really started with protecting premium content for music. And then that led to video. And today that's led us to energy, because although the actual verticals and the businesses are all very different, the essential need to protect data, govern data, have authenticity, authorization, interoperability hasn't changed at all.
Well, Ali, talk a little bit about that, right? I mean, the principles are the same, right? And I think it's, you know, I hate to say that everything is IT at this point, right? But at some point, everything is one connection to another, right? We call it IT, call it connectivity, whatever you want. But the challenge as we expand into some of these industries like energy is that there hasn't always been sort of the endpoint mentality from a security and automation standpoint, right? They've been good at it. You know, the distributed resources and power and all those things, but there hasn't necessarily been sort of the asset management side of that. What are some of the challenges as you step into the world of industry, of energy, that kind of are unique to this industry specifically?
So the main thing is really the decentralization and distributed resources which are out there. So basically, more and more devices are being created, connected, that are not centralized to a single platform. And they have to be trusted so that the data can be trusted, right? The main thing is new devices in terms of like solar panels or chip inverters or even batteries are coming out from all the different OEMs and manufacturers, which they have not been really thinking through how those devices are being actually attacked. So having too many type of devices distributed around is opening the attack surface. So being able to actually trust and authenticate a device that is basically connected to the grid or just basically energy platform is a major actually issue and challenge today.
What's that? Well, you're right. And I think a lot of that conversation sort of centers around the world of APIs, right? Great in principle, sort of challenging when it comes to the world of security, because you've got a lot of exposure and surface, like you mentioned. What are some of those exposure points typically, even beyond APIs, that folks in the energy industry are facing?
You know, Ben, you said everything's becoming IT, and in a way that's really true, particularly in the energy sector, because in the energy sector, we found, well, first of all, there's this IT-OT convergence, as they call it, and it means a lot of things. One of the principal things it means is that the maturing of cybersecurity in the IT realm, in the enterprise realm, with a number of compliance standards and best practices, and now each end node has its own endpoint manager for malware and viruses and all that sort of thing. These are all practices that haven't been very prevalent, right, in especially what they call operational technology, right? So they still have, you know, protocols that are insecure or even insecurable, like Modbus, for example. They don't have the principle of endpoint protection. Rather, they have these air gaps. And you want to know something really wild? There was a study by the Homeland Security a couple years ago where they audited every single utility in the United States to see if that air gap between the public internet and the very sensitive facilities that keep the lights on for us. And in not one single case was that air gap actually maintained. Its integrity was maintained. And in many cases, that air gap was traversed hundreds of times. And you ask why? You know, it's such an obvious vulnerability, and that's why there's been so many successful attacks. The reason why is because of the value of the data. And there is a demand to get data out to feed our AI systems, but increasingly to allow automation to control those systems at the edge, which can't happen without trust. So to answer your question, it's a fragmented world between IT that has all the smarts for the energy system, OT that actually does things at the edge, and then ultimately there's also consumer electronics because the homes are being brought in more and more, and that's a whole other threat landscape and vulnerability landscape. And as we progress with virtual power plants, with distributed energy, all three of those have to be unified in a common constructed trust model.
You know, Julian, I love that response because as a technologist by trade, I can kind of flow with the thought process there. But one of the things that we face as we reach into a lot of these skilled trades industries like energy is that the end of the line doesn't always know how to have those same conversations, right? A lot of times, folks in the municipalities and the co-ops and you know, local utility providers started as technicians and got into the industry through entrepreneurship and don't necessarily have the IT understanding or don't understand the IT infrastructure of trust and air gaps and things like that. How do you start that conversation with folks like them who say, I know that I need to do something. I don't know the ins and outs of it. How do you start that conversation?
So there's a lot of education needed there, right? Every industry that goes through digitization actually has to cross this bridge. And there is basically, even media like went through that 20 years ago, right? When it went from like one-way broadcast to two-way delivery and streaming and so on, and more devices being put. Same thing happening with energy right now. And so the actors which are there needs to follow sort of a trusted model that is defined by regulators and like the standard bodies, right? That's where actually all the compliance regulations bodies have to look into this so they can put out there what are the risks and challenges if the actors don't really follow the right security model out there for any new devices that have come to the energy industry.
Yeah.
Can I add to that?
Of course.
Because there's one thing, especially in energy, that all these entrepreneurs probably didn't anticipate. And they probably didn't anticipate literally being on the front line of a cyber war that's now become fully global with extremely capable nation-state actors that don't really like us too much. And our infrastructure is being attacked every day. You know, we have a hot shooting war in cyberspace today, and they have to protect against that. So the threat model has escalated beyond anybody's imagination. Along with that is, as you say, these people weren't anticipating that. But when you also go to the consumer electronics, to the home, the frontline warrior there is someone like my mom setting up her home network, right? And so what we have to do is really transition very quickly to a constructive trust model where these devices can automagically, and we know how to do that, secure themselves out of the box, authenticate themselves all the way up across the bridge to the IT where the data is going to be useful and managed and create all the great things like virtual power plants. But that's the new threat model and the new reality. So you've touched on something that we're really working very hard on to solve.
You know, it's an interesting battle, right? Because the natural conversation from, okay, you've got your cybersecurity side, you've got your DERM and your DER side, and then you've got your utility owner-operator side. The decision maker for a lot of these and the stakeholders have changed dramatically over the last even 2 to 3 years, right? You see the same thing in a lot of industries too, where the IT manager sort of is the stakeholder for things like security and access control and all these different things. It's not unique to our industry, but how do you attack that from a stakeholder standpoint, or maybe even a business standpoint, who are some of those folks where you say, hey, this is now the person who has to be accountable for this? Let's start that conversation.
Well, ultimately, it's always the service provider that holds the risk, because they have the governance over the entire system. But you bring up a very good point. When you get more and more decentralized, that actual ownership is a little bit unclear. Even the inverter on somebody's roof, is that utility? Is it home-owned? Sometimes it's a bit of both. You get into the home energy management systems within the house, the Nest thermostat, that's clearly my mom's. That's not the utilities. So providing that access in a way that's required, and also to have the constructive trust model in such a way that you have strong authentication and everything like that. The way we do it is we really go from first principles. What we think we're really building in the standard called the Trusted Energy Interoperability Alliance, TEIA, is a new trusted internet for energy specifically that can overlay all of these things, so that now you can have different ownership, but a common trust model that they all feed into, so they can interoperate, and they can interoperate in a very trusted, secure way.
That brings up a really interesting question, right? And as a homeowner, as somebody who lives here in Texas, where we've got a number of different energy challenges from time to time, whether it's data centers, high usage rates, grid resiliency, we got a lot of them. What accountability do I have as an end user, right? We've talked a lot about endpoint devices and things like that, and that's sort of the obvious side of things. But what should I be more aware of, and what should the utility do to teach those end users to say, hey, here's best practices, here's what we recommend from a usage standpoint? How do you have that conversation? What accountability does the end user have at the end of the line?
Well, I think a lot of it is first certification of those platforms and devices, right? Like, so as there are these distributed or decentralized devices coming into the field, the service providers, the energy providers have to make sure they're already certified to the trust model that we're defining. And this is not about replacing the current standards, right? And an EV charger or a solar panel that are using, let's say, OpenADR or IEEE 2030.5, we're not saying we should replace that. That's already a communication protocol that works well. But there should be actually another trust model on top of it that complements sort of accountability for each devices. In terms of the, I think consumers are actually signing up to the programs, right, to help actually save money and cost. And there's got to be basically a set of certified devices that they need to go through and purchase. So I think that's sort of, I would think it's more about, again, on the service provider side than the consumers to enforce like sort of the trust model that needs to be implemented.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, the only accountability of a homeowner, again, example of my mom, is that she buy a piece of equipment that has a trust mark on it to say that she can trust it and put it in her home. And then that's finito. That's all she's should be responsible for, because she shouldn't be expected to be, you know, an IT manager with all the best practices and things like that. And so that's where certification, as Ali is saying, is just, you know, compliance to robustness rules or resiliency rules for a device maker. That's what really moves the needle and really defines minimum accountability for, you know, a homeowner.
You know, Julian, it reminds me a lot of the sort of the traditional IT and cybersecurity model of, hey, we've got our incredible infrastructure, we've got everything set up in place, and then somebody at the end of the line clicks a phishing link and enters their information and brings companies like Disney and MGM down overnight, right? So there's sort of a shared accountability across a lot of different places. Obviously, the end user being, in this case, sort of the folks who can click on the phishing link, but there's also got to be accountability and education on the top end. I mean, would you say that education maybe is the number one challenge right now, or no?
So it's a really interesting question, and I'd approach it looking at the three different realms we're talking about. There's IT enterprise, industrial, and the home. And I think the accountability has to be different in each one of those. I think it's reasonable to expect employees to be well-educated and be what they call that human firewall at the end of the day. Give them all the chances to do the right things, have guardrails, protections, respond and recover if things go bad. But then in industrial settings, you're actually dealing with nation state actors. So the threat is much, much more elevated. And unfortunately for the home, that threat still exists at that high level. And I don't anticipate homeowners, I don't think they really will be able to get educated, nor should they spend their time getting a minor in cybersecurity just so they can live in their home safely. And that's where you have to have things done like in a shrink-wrapped way. And we've seen that in the mobile phone world. You know, our mobile phones today, because they support eSIM, for example, are mil-spec security. They're certified to what's called Common Criteria Level 4+, which is literally military-level security. And you don't even know, you know, and you use eSIMs every day and you get all this protected content, you do your banking and all that kind of stuff. And that's the paradigm that needs to be implemented in the consumer realm, I believe.
If I can add to that, basically the TEIA Trusted Energy Interoperability Alliance defines the trust model based on zero trust architecture, meaning that basically the model and you cannot trust any device, right? You have to basically build the authenticity and authentication of that device in the model throughout the whole chain without actually relying on the user of that device. So there is education for people to understand. Like, for example, in the gateway scenario, all the gateways come with serial boxes as the password, and a lot of people don't change it forever, and it's like really easy to be hacked, right? So there are certain things for configuring a device that has to be educational, explain to the users, whether it's the solar panel or inverters or solar. But a lot of it has to be, we talked about self-certification, the common criteria model for cell phone. You said the device has to be designed in such a way that basically you cannot trust the device at all from the beginning.
You know, I'm curious too, and this is just, you know, we've all had the chance to walk the show floor at Distribute Tech multiple times over the years, and it's interesting because you get to see different stakeholders across all of the different companies. It seems like largely maybe the ultra-high level utilities have done a pretty good job of starting this conversation, but there's such a massive opportunity at that step below, right? Whether you start at even the local and regional municipality or utilities, ISPs, whatever, all the way down to the rural side of things. And I think a lot of times folks maybe get overwhelmed because they're worried about upgrading their infrastructure, they're worried about grid resiliency, and they don't know where the heck to start when it comes to device management, IT, authentication, any of those. Where would you recommend that people start that conversation?
It's a great question, because ultimately these people have to get on with their day job, which is challenging enough as it is. I think what needs to be done, and there's a bit of a gap in the industry, and Ali made the very good point that there are many, many standards out there. In fact, there have been standards since Thomas Edison. The grid has, for 100 or so years, been interoperating and working together, and there are many new ones dealing with data. There's no single one that actually is laser-focused on this deep edge to the cloud or deep edge to deep edge, peer-to-peer, really strong resiliency trust model. And so this is the overlay that they need on top of that. So I'm not exactly answering your question, but I think in the near future, there's going to be an opportunity for these folks to buy things off the shelf. What to do today? All the best practices, most of the best practices are in IT today, because they've been dealing with all of these things today. And what's happening with Zero Trust is that industrial systems are really perimeter-based, and that's part of the air gap philosophy. And what they have to do now is really segment to smaller and smaller perimeters, to where essentially in Zero Trust, we say that identity is the new perimeter. Yep. And it becomes this cryptographic perimeter. So it's to move into these best practices that can be inherited from IT increasingly. And then there's just some like obvious low-hanging fruit. Like if you have Modbus that's anywhere near a public internet connection, you'll have to do something to secure that. There's so many exploit kits off the shelf available for that. You have to ensure all your software is up to date. You know, when you're using protection protocols like TLS, make sure you're using 1.3, because 1.2 is literally dozens of exploit kits easily available and stuff like that. It's all kind of, you know, IT security 101 meshed in with the requirements of industrial.
Well, you're right. And Ali, too, you know, I think that for a long time, folks have wanted some of those IT experts in-house. And as you sort of go into these smaller companies, it's more difficult to have somebody that's a subject matter expert in all these things, which I think is a really nice point for where providers like you guys come in, right? And you know, this isn't a sales pitch, anything like that, but it's important to say, hey, we've got a scalable solution that will continue to grow as the threats grow, right? Because today the threat is, for example, EMPs. Tomorrow the threat is bad actors, right? Why is it so important to work with sort of a service provider like you guys to have those conversations, to worry about those standards and authentications and really future-proof their business? I mean, what's the value there in that case?
Well, a lot of it is it's like insurance, right? They have to implement these in order to avoid like hacks in future, right? So one of the challenges is really getting them to understand what are the consequences of the hacks in terms of either financial loss or basically impacting their revenue because the grid will be shut down for a while, right, until they recover it. So that's sort of like the challenge there. That's basically helping the industry has to look at it. It's not just the service provider. A service provider is looking at how they can maximize their return by using different type of devices. There are different cost points for devices that come in. And so the industry has to basically look at overall how we can enforce this compliance across the board. That way we can actually avoid like hacks and contain the surface attack technically.
And I'd say we're a good partner. We've been doing this for over 30 years. We provide the keys to authenticate devices for the biggest companies in the world. They don't like us to name their names, but it's really the biggest companies in the world because we've developed systems, operations, and infrastructure, including a secure compartmentalized information facility, a SCIF, a military-level SCIF, where keys are protected and high-security modules that are protected in a safe to get in, biometrics, palm scans, retina scans, security card, together with a secret, really highly secure multi-operator protocols, all of these types of things that, you know, if you're running a regular business, you don't want to be running all this kind of stuff. And so to be able to provide very strong, resilient authentication for devices, to enable authorization on all those types of things, that's all we do night and day, and that's our bread and butter. So we love helping folks with that kind of stuff.
Well, that's fantastic. I want to give you both kind of a chance to have a last word here, and I always like to land the plane with this question. You know, pull your crystal ball out, right? That may be challenging because our world changes so much every year, but, you know, what are some of the things that you anticipate seeing in the next 5-10 years, specifically when it comes to some of these strategies being rolled out in the world of energy?
Well, I still think, and I actually been seeing this at DistribuTech this week, that people are paying attention to these challenges. And as like organizations who are involved in compliance definitions and like monitoring like the threat surface, they're really looking at that this seriously. And again, there are more and more AI automation that actually make things worse if you don't contain it down. So I do see that industry is paying attention. And there's more education needed, definitely more collaboration needed from different entities to come in and agree on the right trust model that can basically protect every distributed energy resources.
I think we're going to see a data renaissance, Ben. We're going to see a tsunami of trusted data that comes out, analogous to what we saw in the music industry when the music industry was on its knees, when everybody was stealing music on the internet. When digital rights management came and provided protection, it enabled the music majors to actually go from being, you know, they went private to shelter themselves. They went public for billions of dollars years later when they could actually protect their intellectual property. And I think this is going to be even bigger than that because energy has such tremendous implications. They're saying that there's going to be a 300% increased demand for energy in North America alone just for the data centers. So if we really focus on data in such a way that it can bridge the air gaps, it can unleash the automation to also traverse the air gap to control the devices, I think in the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to be in a golden age of energy. That's even hard to imagine today. But today, the data is so throttled and held back, it's going to be completely different when it's liberated.
Well, look, that's a great place to finish the conversation. And a good word, Julian and Ali, I appreciate you coming in the studio today.
Ben, it was great. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.